2FM.
Squid Game, it's the show that everybody is talking about at the moment. There's no getting away from it at all. It's breaking all kinds of records for Netflix as the most successful original release for the service, causing stock to surge, of course. But unlike Bridgerton, I'm just taking that one there, that's Netflix's other recent smash hit, Squid Game deals with some altogether darker themes. The dystopian genre in TV is what I want to talk about here, because the dystopian genre in TV has enduring popularity. Why is the question I'm asking? I mean, what is it about these dark shows where the world is full of suffering or injustice that holds so much appeal for huge audiences? Well, Deirdre Malumbi of entertainment.ie is with me now to take a look at why we're all obsessed with dystopian drama. Deirdre, welcome to the programme. First of all, give us an explainer of what Squid Game actually is, and then go ahead and tell me, while I make the coffee, why it's so popular.
Hiya, Dave. So Squid Game is essentially a survival drama. It hails from South Korea, and it's been streaming on Netflix for just under a month now. It was released on September 17th. And yeah, like you said, it's breaking all kinds of records, and it's on track to become Netflix's most watched show ever, which is, you know, quite extraordinary. So the whole idea of it story-wise is that it centers on this contest where you have 456 players, all from very different walks of life, but all of whom are in deeply in debt, and they have to play a set of children's games, and if they lose them, then they get penalized severely, but they also have a chance to win a several million dollar prize. So obviously this would be, you know, absolutely.
Whoa, can I go back a bit, because I've seen a couple of them. I'm going to watch the rest too. Penalized severely. Bit more than that.
Yes, that's right. That's right. So the first episode, I'm only a couple of episodes in myself, but I'm already completely, you know, immersed in it. And yeah, I had a feeling that something kind of darker was going to end up going on, that it wasn't just going to be, you know, a simple game of like chase or red light, green light or whatever. So it's very interesting so far. And I'm really liking the fact that, you know, you're delving into a number of different characters and why it is that they're motivated to play this game. And apparently it is very reflective of the fact that, you know, in South Korea, there are a lot of people who are in, you know, personal debt, and that it's a huge actually crisis facing the country at the moment. But I mean, the fact that Squid Game has just become so popular, it is quite baffling. But I mean, the reasons for it being so popular, I think, are manifold. There's the fact that it's gotten critical acclaim. It's on 94% on Rotten Tomatoes. And I do like to, you know, think that people do still listen to the critics when it comes to these shows. And then you've also got the fact that Netflix have this algorithm whereby they show, you know, the top 10 in your country or whatever. So if you see that a show is trending and that a lot of people are watching it, naturally you're going to watch it as well and be a part of the conversation. It's spread a lot through word of mouth. It's so funny because the very first time I heard about this show was I was actually talking to my teenage sister about it, and she was watching it, and now my dad is watching it, and now I'm watching it. So it's just ended up kind of crossing the generations that way. And then as well, it's ended up becoming a huge hit on the internet. There are lots of memes that have been made about it. So it kind of recalls Netflix's hit series Tiger King in that regard. You know, when people can make a lot of references and jokes about a show, I think that that means, you know, that it's made it, at least in contemporary terms.
Yeah, and if there were offices open, everybody would be talking about it over the photocopier or whatever. So let me take a look here. What was I going to say? Yeah, I'm going to play you this little, just 20 seconds. It's the Pink Soldiers theme, basically the theme tune of the program you're talking about. Janie Mac. Okay, it's not exactly the Reardons, is it? Okay, so let's put this out a bit further now, because some of the most popular dramas over the last few years have been dystopian. What is it that attracts people to this genre, do you think, Deirdre?
I mean, I think that there are a lot of different theories. Like, these dystopian stories, they do make for really good narratives. You know, they immerse the viewer, they excite them with these imagined future worlds. And I think that as well, no matter how bleak the world is getting, you know, between the pandemic or the election of Trump or the climate change crisis or Brexit, there have been a lot of, you know, in recent years, pretty dystopian things happening. But it's good to imagine, I suppose, that things could be worse, as bad as are happening in these TV shows. And then I think as well, you know, you follow these individual characters in these stories, and they are resilient and they're able to adapt. And that is, you know, inspiring, that they're able to lead these meaningful lives and that they will survive and that they will get through it. I think that in a way, and I would think that this is something that appeals to people who enjoy horror movies as well, there's kind of this sense of control with them as well, in that audiences can kind of immerse themselves in these worst case scenarios. But there's also that sense of distanciation, that they're not actually in those worlds and they don't actually have to face those problems. So I think that those would be just some of the reasons why people are enjoying these types of series so much.
But isn't there a thing always that, like, you know, there's a huge thing happening on the outside, and then it's the inner emotional and psychological journey as well of the person?
Yeah, that's just it. And I think that that's going to be the appeal of a lot of different types of fiction. But it is just funny how, I mean, I was looking at the number of shows that have just come out around the topic of dystopia. And it's just so funny, especially how they're becoming popular in times of when you think the world is becoming more dystopian than ever. You would think that people would want something feel good and escapist rather than depressing and nihilistic. And yet these narratives are coming out again and again, which is quite fascinating, really.
Yeah, like when you look at things like The 100 or, you know, Black Mirror or The Society, Westworld, Colony and all those. I mean, the only one I haven't seen Altered Carbon either. The only one I've probably seen is The Man in the High Castle of all this kind of thing. And that's about four series and that's about 40 programmes. And the ending was like, you know, the way you really want the endings of your series to be good. And the ending was daft as a brush, frankly. So it kind of took away from the whole thing. But it was completely all there. And there is a kind of a visceral thrill through every single programme and a thing like that. So this appetite for uncomfortable genres, let's call it, we're not all very depressed, are we? I mean, what exactly is going on? I know I've kind of slightly asked you that again, but I want you to go a bit deeper into this. Are we all bonkers?
You would think so. But I suppose, like I said, it is just more, it's weird because we are just coming out of a huge crisis, which was so dystopian. A lot of us never could have imagined a world where you couldn't leave your house for fear of getting infected by a virus, which was killing millions. So maybe there is some kind of weird, you know, psychological thing going on where we're getting comfort in wallowing in dystopia. But again, I find that a lot of the times with these stories, even though they can be quite depressing, they are also quite hopeful because they you know, explore individuals who do survive and they defeat these impossible forces and they overcome them. And I think as well, we're seeing a lot of examples where people are being inspired and actually taking, you know, action after seeing these kind of materials. So, for example, you've got The Hunger Games, which inspired young fans to get more involved in social justice campaigns, while women in Argentina, Ireland and the US dressed up as characters from The Handmaid's Tale during 2018 in protests against restrictions on reproductive freedom. So it's really interesting what's going on in terms of these texts and how people are engaging with them and not just kind of sitting back and being entertained. But you also wonder, like, there's also a fear of that going, you know, maybe too far as well in terms of political activism. So it's kind of a fascinating time.
Yeah, in fact, one of them was there I forgot about was The Handmaid's Tale. I have seen all those as well. So what are the shows then that have dealt best with dystopian worlds?
Yeah, I'm actually a huge fan of The Handmaid's Tale. I really do think it's one of the best shows to come out in the past couple of decades.
Do you not think it went a bit kind of horror porn by season three, no?
I know that it got a lot of criticism for that, but I just found it like a very powerful program. Yeah. And that Elizabeth Moss's Dune is just extraordinary. And it's just amazing to see her journey, how, you know, in season one, she was kind of rebelling against this system because it depicts this totalitarian society where fertile women are forced into childbearing slavery. And it's absolutely like horrific at times. But the character of Dune has just been such a fascinating character study, in that she's rebelling against the system kind of in small ways, but her actions just become bigger and bigger. And the past season that's just passed by, without kind of getting too into it, like, she's just become so kind of broken down as a result of this system, and there's so little humanity left in her, and she's actually turned into like almost quite a cruel and harsh character.
Yeah, but she got the courage by the end of season three, when, I don't care if I'm giving some of it away here, when she gives the baby away and she stays behind at the end. That's a big one. That's a big step, as in, I'm going to fix this, I'm not going to run away from it.
She does. It's an absolutely incredible journey to watch for anyone who hasn't seen it. And, you know, I think it has just the right tone, in that just when it's getting completely bleak and depressing, something good happens, something comes through for June. And I think that that's what keeps people hooked, is that little bit of hope, that glimmer of hope that keeps
people
going.
Okay, well, what about the other ones? I did mention Black Mirror earlier on. I've seen so little of that compared to most people. What about that?
Yeah, this one is just, I find this too dark at times. I've only seen a couple of episodes, to be honest, because it's actually too dark for me. It's too twisted. But it essentially is written in an anthology style. So all of the episodes are completely standalone. And it depicts this high-tech multiverse where humans' greatest innovations and darkest instincts kind of collide. So some of the episodes which are really noteworthy, I think that Nosedive will be quite a popular one. So this is headlined by Bryce Dallas Howard, and she plays a character who's striving for this utopian life through being very superficial and kind of performing, because essentially in this society, social media success means that you get a high socioeconomic status. So initially, she's doing very successfully, and not to give it away, but towards the end, she's doing not so successfully, and that has like a major kind of psychological impact on her and everything. And then the interactive Black Mirror film Bandersnatch, that's available on Netflix now as well. And so you as a viewer will be able to make decisions for the main character, who is a video game programmer. And it kind of challenges and incites the viewer to make these increasingly immoral choices. So it's a really kind of interesting study of, kind of putting you in that seat. And sometimes it almost kind of backs you into a corner, and you have to like take these like really kind of awful, awful actions. But it's so funny because the interactive, kind of option on Netflix, it's only been explored in a few texts, but I thought it worked really, really well for Bandersnatch in like how responsible are you for this character and what he decides to do. I thought that it was really interesting in that regards. And yeah, engages in the whole dystopian theme and your role in it in a very effective way that way.
And Westworld was watched by loads of people, especially the first series. I think I saw a couple of the programs. I didn't really see the whole thing. So that was pretty good, or was it?
Westworld, I missed that one because like I remember it kept on getting such mixed reviews, and people were like, it's unraveling way too
Well, what about
slowly.
that one, The Last Man, or 3%? I've only heard of them. I don't know anything about them.
Yeah, I've started the Why the Last Man because that's actually streaming on Disney Plus here in Ireland now, and you can get it on Hulu in the US. So it's a really interesting idea. It takes place in this post-apocalyptic world where a cataclysmic event has killed every mammal with a Y chromosome. That is, except for one man. So now he's very kind of, interesting and the subject of study by all these women with how are they going to kind of utilize him, I suppose. So, and then on top of that man's mother actually also happens to be the US president. So there's some really interesting going
Right.
on.
Okay. So what are the criticisms that are generally leveled at dystopian drama?
I mean, there are like lots of the criticisms are very fair. I mean, you touched on one yourself there, Dave, like talking about The Handmaid's Tale and that, the torture porn in it that has been a subject of criticism. There's also the fact that dystopia has kind of almost become like more of a buzzword, and people aren't really thinking about what these texts are like saying and engaging with them so much. They're just kind of sitting back and willing to be like entertained. There's also the fact that they are very bleak. They can be depressing. They can be nihilistic. For people who are struggling with mental health issues, this genre can do more harm than good because it can exacerbate people's fears about the future. It can lead to trauma and depression and grief because, they are quite realistic and they
So, wait a
can
minute.
be
So,
quite.
we're overloading on the whole thing, aren't we? Is there too much of it, and therefore maybe becoming immune?
I think that there is almost too much because, like, I mean, I've been looking at the number of dystopian titles. And I mean, on Netflix alone, you have Osmosis, Altered Carbon, Colony, Bird Box, and 3%. They're just some of the dystopian titles available. You mentioned The Man in the High Castle, which is on Amazon, on Apple TV, you have C. So, really, basically, you can't get away from them. They're on TV, they're on every single streaming service. I think that people are eventually going to become a bit kind of, I don't know, they're not going to engage with them in the same way or not really think about, the commentaries that they're making on what is really going on in society, because they're just going to become another form of entertainment, I suppose. So I think that
Yeah.
there are a lot of them out and possibly too many.
What about politics? I mean, do these shows tend to have what I would call a political message?
I would think so. I mean, you look at Squid Game, and that is very much kind of mirroring the real personal debt crisis in South Korea and the
Yeah.
fact that widening income gap going on. Black Mirror is reflecting on the dangers of the powers of social media and how big a role that is starting to play in our lives. You have the feminist commentary that's very inherent to The Handmaid's Tale and how it looks at, women's rights and gender inequality. And you have a pattern of this show kind of starting to trend in states in America when they're starting to look to outlaw abortion. And of course, we would have, referenced The Handmaid's Tale just in recent years when we we were talking about the Eighth Amendment and, you know, Why the Last Man as well was another show I mentioned. So it's interesting because these shows are engaging with politics, but in a very kind of accessible and thought-provoking way and in a provocative way as well.
Yeah, and the few Black Mirrors I've seen, you could call it the politics of technology, because the effects that unlimited access to technology would have on society was certainly in the three programmes that I saw huge. So like you do say these shows are probably warning shots in some way. Like you mentioned the likes of The Handmaid's Tale holding a mirror up to Trump's America, and they're cautionary tales for today then in some ways. But Squid Game is unique because it's broken through in a way not many non-English language shows do. Are we a bit more, I don't know, sanitized over here?
I wouldn't say so, because, you know, I think that violence actually is really inherent to the dystopian genre. And it's pretty much been, you know, present in all of the projects that I've listed here. So in a way, these kind of shows are a mirror to, in a very frightening way, us having this fear that something is going to happen that is extreme, that is radical and shocking. But, you know, at the end of the day, you have to also think about the fact that these programs are also fiction, and there's that distanciation as a result of it. And I think that people are still watching these shows, not so much as, you know, a warning shot and a lesson of what we need to make sure doesn't happen, so much as allowing us to just imagine what a worst case scenario could look like. So it'll be interesting to see kind of in the future, like I said, just how inspiring and provocative these shows are, because at the moment, I think that we're still able to kind of sit back a bit and just be entertained by them.
Okay, so finally, like, there are what, 10 programs of Squid Game on there now. I presume is there a second series?
There's been a bit of talk about it, yeah, but I'm not sure if anything's like confirmed yet, because I mean, my understanding of it anyway was that it was a one-off, and because I haven't seen the ending, I can't exactly say. Oh, definitely should or not. But I mean, at the end of the day, Dave, these things are always about money. So if they think it's going to make money, I think that they will probably make a season two, but it'll depend on, yeah, the demand for it. My understanding is anyway, Netflix is, as a result of Squid Game, they're investing in a lot more Korean drama anyway. So certainly we'll be getting, if not a second season of this, certainly, you know, similar programming in the future, which will be really interesting.
Indeed, it will. All right. Well, listen, entertainment.ie it is. Deirdre Malumbi, thanks a million, Deirdre, for talking to us on the programme today.
Dave Fanning, weekends on 2FM.